committee is going to be required. Eugene, I know you wanted to make a comment. Eugene, go right ahead. K2RYW in the tech net.
Okay, Dick. W2EWK. You want to put me on the side or you want me to come now? I have a question about my dog. I had a chip in my dog, and when I took my dog to the doctor, he took a machine and he put it by my dog's neck and he got a number from my dog. Now, is that chip transmitted to the doctor's machine or is the machine transmitted to the dog?
And the answer is both. With high probability, Eugene, the chip that was installed in the neck of your dog most likely is some form of RFID tag. Radio frequency identification, RFID tag. And I work with those for the last 5 years every single day of my life, so I have some acquaintance with them. There's lots of different kinds. But the ones that are put on animals, I believe, are the ones that could have quite a bit of data. The dog's, all of his allergies and all of his date of birth and what medicines he's been given and whatever. The tag itself, if it's the one I think it is thoroughly passive. The majority of RFID tags are thoroughly passive. There is no battery on board. There is no transmitter on board. As the tag is being read, let me drop. The way RFID tags work, and the ones that have the longest life to them, are the ones that have no batteries and thoroughly passive. The Easy Pass tag that you use on your automobile that goes through a toll gate, that one has a battery. And in something like 7 years, that battery's got to be replaced. And you trade the unit in, and they give you another one. But the thoroughly passive ones, the transmitter that's in the hand of the physician emits a signal. It's a fraction of a watt signal. The diode and dipole that's on the tag that's inside the dog picks up that signal, rectifies it. It becomes a couple of tenths of a volt of rectified DC voltage. That turns on the integrated circuit that's in the center of the tag, buried under the skin of the dog. But the integrated circuit gets turned on. The integrated circuit modulates the impedance of the antenna, and it does it with a digital code. Because the impedance of the antenna is being modulated, the signal that's coming from the handheld reader going to that antenna gets reflected off the antenna, but the reflection now gets stronger and weaker as the integrated circuit modulates the impedance on the tag, on the antenna on the tag. It's the way it works. So it's a thoroughly passive modulation system. The tag modulates its impedance. The reader sees that signal going up and down, reads that digital code, and finds out your dog's name, when he was given his shot, when he was born, all kinds of information like that could be put into that tag. And some of those tags, not only is the information installed on the tag maybe before the tag was installed on the dog, however, you can also write more information on that tag. Some of the more modern tags, you can it may have up to 96 bits of information. The tag may have started off with 25 bits, and each time you visit the doctor, he adds 10 more bits of information to that tag. He can write to the tag with that reader. Ain't that a classy system? And the tag itself, in some cases, is a 50-cent item that can contain all of that information, and it never forgets all that information. It's as you can see, the possibilities for this technology are pretty wild. You ain't seen nothing yet. If you studied where barcodes were in, say, 1965...
Repeater, timeout, cancel.
If you studied where barcodes were in 1965, that's sort of where we are with RFID today. It's got a pretty glamorous future, I think. W2EWK, K2RIW in the tech net. Good question.
Okay, thank you very much, Dick. You answered my question. And next month, he's getting a GPS put inside of him also. And I was reading some of the papers. He might have to get an FCC license as well. What do you think of that there, Dick? W2EWK.
Well, in the case of the RFID tag, which is not a transmitter, no FCC license is required, and the frequencies that are used for the tag is a license-free band. Now, the GPS tag, I guess that's in case the dog gets lost, somebody who finds him. Let me think now. What's the advantage of a global positioning satellite tag on the dog? If the dog had a way of reading the GPS receiver, he knows which way is home. Your dog, I know, is pretty smart, but I don't think he's quite that smart, Eugene. So why would you want to put a GPS tag on the dog? Over to you, Eugene.
Okay. It is for, they call me up, once he leaves the property, it's like 100 by 100, right? Once he leaves, they call me on the phone, they tell me where he's at. And you also get a receiver that tells you where he's at also. You know, it's like a little TV screen, you know, like a readout, QSL.
Okay, so I think they're going to put sensing devices around your property to let you know when your dog leaves the property. Is that true?
No, Vic, that's not true. What they're going to do, once they're going to program the GPS, once he leaves the property, they're going to call you on the telephone. And you can also have a receiver to track him down as well. QSL?
Yeah, it strikes me a little bit similar to this new golf ball they've got now. You can buy a golf ball which has got a small electronic device built into it, and up to, I think it's 300 feet, your ball may fall into the rough, you know, in some deep grass or into the weeds, and you don't know where it is. As long as it's not underwater, the handheld device will help you find that golf ball. So there's an RF golf ball you can buy now, and I guess there's an equivalent to that for your dog. How about that? Sounds like fun. Sounds like you're going to go for that. Okay, of all the people who signed in, the next person who had a real question, to my knowledge, is Joe, W-H-O-R-Y-Y. The subjects are ranging pretty far and wide here tonight, Joe. We're everything into from animals to to carbon in the atmosphere to global warming to sampling oscilloscopes. This is the technical net. We don't discuss technical subjects. That's a joke. Over to you, Joe, W-H-O-R-Y-Y, T-H-O-R-I-W.
Very good. Good evening, Dick. I sent you a previous email concerning the subject I want to ask a question about. It's basically about deep TV reception, whether I should focus on getting an antenna that works on just primarily UHF and go for the highest gain possible, or get one that also covers the high band VHF and UHF in combination.
Yeah, we did. Eric did give us a feedback on that over the last couple of weeks, and that is channel 7 through 13. After February 17, 2009, will be in use. And ABC, CBS, ABC, WOR, PIX, Channel 13, all of them are going to be using upper VHF as well as UHF channels. So for you to get it all, I think you want an upper UHF and upper VHF as well as a UHF antenna. That's my take on it. Let's see if Eric wants to add anything to that. KE2EJ, K2RIW in the TechNet. Okay, maybe Eric's not available right now. But I do remember Eric telling us that Channel 13, which is now analog, will flip over to digital. And at 3 o'clock tomorrow morning, this is a few hours from now, they're going to be doing a sample transmission on digital television. Just to get ready. So, channel 7, 9, 11, and 13 will be used for digital television, and possibly those over-the-air channels you're going to watch. A man of your resources should buy an antenna that covers that as well as VHF. And whether it be a combined antenna or two separate antennas on two separate towers in your backyard that have line of sight to the Empire State Building, that's your choice. Back to you, Joe.
Question, WS2N.
Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, but what I was trying to get at is I don't know if they're going to be broadcasting also in UHF at the same time. That's what I need to know. They're going to be broadcasting in UHF and VHF. Maybe I'll just go for UHF and totally. And don't bother with the bigger ones. It's going to be VHF and UHF.
Are they going to have to buy a different box if they want to get HDTV? Or you know, is it going to be just, you know, just regular digital picture? You know, are there going to be two transmissions from Channel 2, two transmissions from Channel 4, one regular digital, one HDTV. People are going to have two boxes. And then the other problem I could see people having is plugging the these boxes into the wall. You know, if you have a situation where you have a power failure, people used to have backups. You know, you go to a battery TV. Now, if your power's out, these boxes are going to be plugged into the wall. I mean, that system won't work. I think that's going to be a big problem. No problem is the people with the little battery TVs, the ones that didn't have any coaxial connection or internal antenna. Ones, you know, just with the regular telescopic antenna that they pulled out. I guess those TVs are going to have to be far away because you wouldn't be able to really, I don't think it would be that easy to the average person to do surgery and open up these little TVs and install this gigantic box inside this little TV to pick up digital. I think they're going to have a lot of problems there. But I'm wondering about the two signals primarily, HDTV and standard, regular digital TV. Is there going to be two transmissions per station? How are they going to work that? Do you know? Back to you, WSN.
And
whoever,
sir, with a comment.
In 2 hours, though, recognize, I think that's Frank. Okay, got you on the list. Without a doubt, February 17, 2009, analog television ceases to exist, and all television over-the-air broadcast will be digital. What you're asking is what percentage of that is going to be high-definition digital television. And I think that's a little bit like what happened when analog television in the mid-50s started transmitting color television. Certain highly watched programs like Bonanza very early went on color. An awful lot of the high-quality programming, the ones that have big advertisers, I think will go the extra mile and use digital, high-definition. But not all of them. Not all of them. Your television set that can receive digital will be getting you 90% of what you want. If you buy a set that's capable of 1090i or 1090, that's what, interlaced or 1090 sequential, a high-end television, will give you a little bit more quality. But you don't have to go there. The so-called high-def program will be watchable on a digital-equipped receiver that is not high def. You just won't be getting all the sharpness to the picture. When it comes to the portable battery operated sets, my prediction is you're going to see a whole lot of products suddenly come out next year, which are a little bit like a cell phone that you carry in your pocket that allows you to watch digital television. There's going to be a whole lot of products like that. Palm tops, laptops, cell phones. When it comes to the digital converter box that plugs into the wall, there already is a version that runs on 12 volts. And so for a guy who's electronically smart like you, Paul, to come up with a completely separate 12-volt power supply so that your digital converter keeps flying, that's easy. I know you can do that. You can buy a version that can do it, or you can look inside your box, because the wall wart that powers it, I think in most cases, is something like a 12-volt power supply. So for you to...
Repeater, timeout, cancel.
Some accurate information, Dick?
Go right ahead, Eric.
All right, a couple things. The digital converters, most of them are off the 12 volts. Some of them actually have an AC cord. There are now four different brands of battery-operated digital TVs, although battery only lasts like an hour because the technology is such that the receiver chips still draw a bit of juice. But that's changing. As far as, like, if you've got a little portable TV with an antenna on it, there's nothing to stop you from making a little quarter-wave antenna and plugging it into the back of your converter, and your TV's going to pick it up. Because it's actually a little analog transmitter that's transmitting. Alright. Also, as far as, like, the percentage of material that's HD, if anything is being transmitted, you will get 100% of the transmission, no matter whether you're watching it on an HDTV or a regular TV. The converter boxes that are the cheap ones don't make high definition, but what they do is they will take an HD transmission and turn it into a letterbox for you. So that solves that issue. All right, so, the person that does go out and buy a high definition receiver will see the program in high definition. By the way, more and more of the advertisers now are demanding that their commercials be done in 16:9 at least. Not necessarily high def, but minimum 16:9. And the remaining non-high def programs out there are major non-networks, independent syndications, and some of them will never change because they're never being shot again. And then some of them will change when they finally figure out that they're losing their audience because they're watching something else. The actual high definition image, believe it or not, psychologically attracts more people to the picture. So, there you go. Receiver technology is still improving. It's not as good as it can be, but it's not as bad as it was a year ago. K2RSQ, K2J.
Every major change is going to have some growing pains. Joe, don't worry, we're going to come back to you. I know you got the doubled on that one. Paul, I wonder if that's most of the answer you're looking for. WS2M, K2RIW.
Very good, except for the pod that Eric ran by with the box. If you had an old TV, say one of these portable TVs, you made it sound like you could put it near the TV and it would work. I didn't quite follow that. Almost like it's converting it with that, like it's transmitting itself back into the TV. That one flew right by me. Are you really saying that the portable TVs are still going to be able to be used somehow with these converter boxes? And if how is it done? Because, you know, you can't wire them in. They have their own little antenna that's attached to it, without any coaxial connection in the back. That's what I didn't get. Back to you, Dick.
I'm going to make a guess on this one. Many of the converter boxes, like many of the video cassette recorders we used to use, will pour out a signal on channel 3. I think Eric is telling you that you can put the channel 3 output of the box into a small WIF antenna, which in turn gets picked up by your old-fashioned black and white, your old-fashioned portable analog set, and picks up channel 3. Let's see if Eric, if that's what he had in mind. Over to you, Eric.
That's precisely it. Most of the boxes will provide 0 dBmV, which is a good chunk of signal, and stick it into an antenna, and away you go. You know, just don't be 30 feet away, 50 feet away from it. It works just fine.
In fact, I think there are some people who literally transmit that signal to multiple places around the house in a wireless manner on channel 3, and therefore their portable battery-operated or highly portable little small analog TV sets. They could walk around the house with it, watching channel 3, and don't have to be wired to it. Over to you, Paul.
Okay, I saw the converter boxes in the store, but I didn't see like an antenna sticking out of it. So you take the converter box. The normal hookup for somebody is going to be to take the converter box. I'm sure it would be taking whatever cable you got coming from your antenna on the roof into the box, and there must be probably a coaxial cable going to your regular big TV. That sounds like a normal hookup, but it sounds like you could take that the output of that converter box and make up a little whip antenna to it, and it will transmit to the local surroundings within inside the room or maybe inside the house. Is that what you're saying?
That's what he's saying. The channel 3 output F connector on your converter box, or the channel 3 output F connector on your video recorder, is putting out approximately 0 dBm, or approximately 0 dBmV. It's putting out a fairly potent signal. So if on that F connector you make yourself a simple quarter wave whip antenna for channel 3, it will have a reasonable range to a similar whip antenna that's on the analog television. Over to you, Paul.
That is really very good information. Never thought of that. Yeah, okay. Yeah, you know, if you wanted to, you could, you're saying you could even take a video recorder and do the same thing and transmit it to your TV. Very good, Dick. Never heard that one, but I'll put that in the back of my head. Thanks, Dick. Back to you.
Yeah, there are people who are doing that in their house. In many cases, they're taking the output from the video cassette recorder, putting it into a small amplifier that in turn goes into an antenna system that transmits channel 3 around their particular house. And then with a simple whip antenna or a rabbit ear on the top of this portable TV, they walk around the house picking up channel 3. Therefore, they're watching their favorite channel that's really coming from the video cassette recorder, which is either itself playing back a pre-recorded program, or it's being used as a front-end converter to pick up the signal from the roof. So I think Eric is saying that we can do that with our digital TV converter box. Let's see if Eric's got any more he wants to add to that. KE2EJ, K2LIW.
K2LIW, KE2EJ. Yeah, no, that works fine. It really does. It's 0 dBmV. It's 60 dBmV, the volts, if you figure it out. I think it's like 3 or 4 milliwatts, something like that, when you convert it down to 75 ohms. But that works fine. The output of the converter box produces a regular NTSC, same thing as the big transmitters transmit now, except they'll be the only thing transmitting them. Hook it into an antenna and it transmits into free space instead of going through a piece of cable. One thing that I may have not mentioned is that many of the stations have multiple services going on. Well, CBS is being the purest, and they give you the best picture because they're using all their bandwidth to transmit one channel. Whereas pretty much everybody else is doing a lot of stuff. Was WNET has a high definition channel and another channel called Kids, just for kids, and another channel called MMA, which is the Spanish speaking venture. It's a channel for it's a PBS channel in Spanish. Whereas LIW at the moment is transmitting 3 standard definition channels, 3 4x3 channels, but that's going to change at some point. We're going to go to high def probably in the spring. Anyway, that's the story. K2IW, K2J.
Very fine. Okay, I'm actually going to tell you guys what's in the latest issue of QST Magazine, but before I do that, Joe's statement and question got covered up, so let me pass it back to Joe, W2RYY. K2RIW. You've really got it this time, Joe.
Okay, basically, I guess to finish the question I'm asking, are channels 7, 9, 11, 13 going to have duplicate transmissions in the UHF spectrum also, or are they going to be primarily going back to VHF digital?
I think the second. In other words, the programming that will be on 7 through 13, I think, will not be duplicated on the UHF channels. I think other programming will be on the UHF channel. Let's see if Eric agrees with that. KE2EJ, K2RIW.
Could you repeat that one more time, Dick? I'm sorry.
Yeah, Joe is asking, when he buys his new rooftop antenna, does he really have to buy upper VHF as well as UHF? He wants to know, will 7, 9, 11, and 13 have programming that is duplicated on UHF? I think the answer is no. In other words, I think the programming that will be on 7, 9, 11, and 13, when everything is digital, will be unique programming that, in the most part, will not be duplicated on UHF channels. See if you agree with that. Over to you, Eric.
All right, here's the plans for New York. What you now call CBS on Channel 2 will be on UHF. What you now call NBC on Channel 4 will be on UHF. What you now call Channel 5 will be on UHF. What you call Channel 7, which is currently on UHF, but when the transition occurs, they'll be on VHF. Okay, what you now call Channel 9, they will continue to be on UHF. They're not going to VHF. What you call Channel 11 is now on UHF and will be back on VHF. And Channel 13, which is way up there on UHF, will be on VHF. So, you want to get the same stuff you get now? You need a high VHF antenna and UHF. And the closest thing that you could possibly get duplicated, if you lived way out east on the island and you picked up another NBC station from Connecticut, then you'd have duplication of services. But in our general neighborhood, no.
M2EO, Dick.
Rich recognized. Joe, you got it.
Okay, that's what I was looking for as far as an answer. That answers that. So channels 7, 11, and 13 will be on high band VHF, and everything else is going to be on UHF.
KC2QIQ with a question?
That's what he said. We've got Rich and Glenn in that order. Rich, go ahead.
All right, so.
And Frank, who I forgot. Rich, go ahead, and then I'm going to pick up Frank. Go ahead, Rich.
Okay, Dick, what I wanted to ask Eric, we have one digital TV in the house on DirecTV right now. I'm going to be buying a second set, and I'm wondering if there's any good reason to wait to purchase it after February 17th when they knock out NTSC. Like, I know right now there's a law where all the sets have to have NTSC as well as digital capability. I'm sure that's going to go out the window. Are there any other changes that are going to be made on new model digital TVs that maybe I should wait for new models to come out after February 17th? Back to you, Dick.
Yeah, there's another question to that. The set you're thinking of buying now, between now and February 17th, is it going to be the not-so-serious set that watches the news in the kitchen when you're eating breakfast in the morning? Or is this going to be the full-blown living room family set? Which one are you thinking of buying between now and then, Rich? Go ahead.
Okay, well, I keep the set in the bedroom, not in the living room. But, yeah, it's going to be the main set. I'm buying a 37-inch. I've been looking at an LG that kind of caught my eye. I think I mentioned that. We have a 26-inch no-name that I'm giving to my father. We're moving that into his bedroom. And they're both going to be on DirecTV. But I would maybe, you know, like to be able to receive over-the-air stuff, too. You know, get the most bang for the buck.
Okay, so it's a full-blown set with full capability in what normal people would say is the living room. So, as I see it, Eric, his question is there any advantage of him waiting between now and February? I know there's going to be a couple of sales after February, but I guess he's really asking, is there any great disadvantage you know about if he buys the set now and it contains the NTSC, which is not going to be useful to him? Over to you, Eric.
All right. Well, first of all, the law was written that after 3 years ago, any sets that were larger than 26 inches had to have a digital capable tuner in it. So that meant they could receive analog and digital. Well, it just so happens that the low power stations and cable and stuff like that, they're still going to have analog. So all sets from, I think it was 6 months ago or 8 months ago, had to have both a digital and analog tuner in it, and will continue to stay that way. So, in terms of buying a set, the longer you wait, the more likely you are to get a newer technology. So, you know, I put it off for as long as you could, but I mean, if you already got to that TV and you're hooked up to that, and that should satisfy your needs. You don't need to know from nothing about a digital tuner because you don't need it. Because you're going in video anyway, you're going in HDMI. But that also means that you're a fairly recent receiver, you know, monitor that you're watching it on. So, there. But, you know, if you need another set in another room, and you don't need it so fast, because there's a whole bunch of new technologies coming out, and also the receiver technology, what they're selling in the sets now, they have to sell all the stuff that they made for the past 8 months. So you got to figure that the new generation of stuff ain't going to happen for another while. KTRIWK2J.
And because of our slowdown of the economy, there's a lot of stuff piled up of the previous technology, so to speak, that they're going to be selling off at a hopefully a nice sale rate. Sorry we forgot about you, Frank. I know you had a question earlier. N2RSO, K2RIW. Go ahead, Frank.
Okay, Dick. Hold on. I'm sorry. I had two comments, not questions. Number one, first comment, is on the channels and frequencies. I've noticed that there's a wealth of information on the Internet, so anyone who really wants to get into this, my suggestion is do three things. Google, Google, and Google. And I would start with the FCC website. I did a little research, and one of their pages shows a state-by-state breakdown of the networks, the channels, the frequencies used, going from analog to digital. So that's number one. Number two, a comment I had made, I don't recall if it was last week or the week before, about the WineGuard digital tuner. I think Eric had mentioned that WineGuard does not manufacture their own. They import. Well, he was right, because I ordered the WineGuard along with a little battery holder, and there's a little tag on the back that says Made in China. Now, let me drop it for a second. I also went to my local Target store in Levittown and discovered another box manufactured by, supposedly, RCA. And it was approximately the same price, and since I have two TVs at home, one small portable and one slightly larger, that both of which are capable of running off battery power, I decided to buy a second box. Now, at the outset, let me mention that I have not tested either box yet, since I don't have an appropriate antenna for it. But when I opened both boxes, I discovered both units to be identical. The plastic cases, the switch on and off, whatever, everything was exactly the same. So the story that I had heard originally, that WineGuard was the only manufacturer to have a converter powered by batteries, was false. Apparently there are a number of manufacturers out there. And both of these work off of 9 volt, not 12 volt. They come with a 9 volt, 1 amp wall warts, switching wall warts. And the unit that I bought from WineGuard will hold 6 D cells to give you 9 volts. I don't suggest trying to power this thing by a 9 volt, standard 9 volt battery. But that's about it. As soon as I test these things, I'll give you a report on how they work. But obviously, they were both manufactured in China by the same company, and WineGuard put their name on one, and RCA put their name on the other. Okay, back to you, Dick. This is sent to RSO.
Hey, Dick, on a quick one. I'm just curious. Where are you located? You should try that. It is.
He's in Wantagh. Go ahead, RSO. What is your reception like from Wantagh?
And I have not connected an antenna, and I have not tested them, so I don't know yet. As soon as I get something to connect and aim up at the Empire State Building, I'll give it a try, and then I'll give you my report.
Okay, and so Eric is going to want to know what your reception is like from your rooftop antenna, or even rabbit ears if you give it a try. From Wantagh, I don't expect you to get great reception on rabbit ears, but who knows? You might be in a darn good location. Second of all, that switching power supply that puts out 9 volts at 1 ampere, that could be a conservative thing that they had left over from some other project. I'm having trouble believing that the converter draws 9 watts, an ampere at 9 volts. I'll bet you it draws 350 milliamps. What's your guess on that one, Eric? What do you think is the current drain of the converter, the WineGuard converter? KE2EJ, K2RIW.
Oh, I'm sure it draws 750, 800 milliamps. I told you those chips are very hungry.
Wow. Is that because the chips haven't been refined, or are they really that busy doing that much parallel processing? If this is not a transmitter, this is a receiver, and it's not being built for high dynamic range. from your point of view, Eric, where the hell is all that current going?
You got to remember, that takes not only an RF clock, okay, that turns the RF into digits. Okay, think about what it takes to make that equalizer go, and that equalizer is in hardware. I mean, it's really in software and hardware. You know what I'm talking about. Those chips are, you know, kind of hungry too, especially when you get into the large surface topology. They tend to draw a little bit of current when you want the speed that you need. Remember, a symbol is, what is it, 97 nanoseconds? You got some speed issues there. Then, because these are converter boxes that make regular TV, they have to break down the stream and turn the MPEG into video. That's like having a whole computer, you know?
Wow. Alrighty. The actual equalizer, with all of the taps and all of the variable amplitude and variable polarity on those taps, I'm guessing that that delay line with the taps is really a bucket brigade circuit. A FIFO bucket brigade circuit with a whole lot of taps. And each one of those taps goes into a op-amp-like circuit which can be adjusted in amplitude and polarity, but the digital version of it. I guess it's a digitally fired feedback network into op-amp circuits. Is that approximately what's going on there in the equalizer? Go ahead.
You know, the equalizer is after you get I and Q, not before.
Okay, does that mean there's an I equalizer and a Q equalizer? Go ahead.
No, there's no information in the Q, we just dump it. Think of it as a, think of it as each bucket is an N plus one multiplying and summing junction, because you're doing this via numbers. You're not actually doing it as, say, you were to equalize on the RF side of things.
Okay, I've got to think digital bucket brigade circuits instead of analog. Alrighty. Looks like it really draws all that current, so therefore it's got to run on C cells or D cells, and not on a 9-volt transistor radio battery. So, if you're building yourself a power supply to make sure you've got digital television during a blackout, it looks like it's got to be fairly stoochy. Better have a good supply of flashlight batteries or the equivalent of a car battery and a voltage regulator. A motorcycle, what we call it now, lead acid battery with a regulator is one approach. Hey, with any further questions on all of the above, give me your call letters right now. K2RIW on the TechNet.
KC2QIQ.
TUK. Good evening, Dick.
Okay, Mr. TUK, I think it was, I heard. Glenn first. Go ahead, Glenn.
Actually, my question was first for Eric when he was talking about the high VHF. I was wondering if he can give a frequency range, because right now I have an antenna that I'm using, and I was just wondering what kind of bandwidth, maybe see if my antenna actually covers that whole range right now. I'm pretty sure it covers. My antenna right now is good for around, you know, somewhere between 300 to 1 gigahertz. Just wondering how much lower in VHF the channel's going to be broadcasting on.
Okay, channel 7 through 13 is what you're looking for. Channel 7, I think, starts off at 174 megs. Channel 13 is 215 approximately. So you got to go below the numbers you just gave me, Glenn. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was kind of afraid of that. The other question I have for Eric is, I bought the new Zenith receiver, and that picks up both channels unequivocally perfect and everything else, but what I was wondering is, I found the original manual for my Motorola one, which was the first one that I bought, and the model of it is HDT100. And one of the things I noticed while looking through the instructions inside here, because I actually, when this thing works, it actually gives me a better output picture, composite output that goes into my widescreen high-definition TV, high-definition ready TV. And I was wondering if he's aware of any of the software that can reprogram this, because apparently they give you a RS-232 output jack, and they do talk about programming firmware or software, and I was wondering if he was aware of any upgrades that are out there, or maybe I should just contact Motorola directly.
Are you talking about a Delta Thomas Charlie 100?
Yes, I am, Eric.
Okay, that the PPC-100 is actually built by Thompson. It was sold under the RCA brand name and a couple of others. I think Radio Shack even had it for a while. That was like the first receiver. It also does direct TV.
Well, like, as I said, the picture out of it is great. The only problem is that when I compare it to the Zenith, it doesn't really pick up all the channels anymore the way the Zenith does. The Zenith just really locks right on, bang, all the channels there. It programs really quick. The HDT 100, it's a little slower, and sometimes it just doesn't get all the channels, you know. So I was just wondering, is there maybe some kind of an upgrade available for it somewhere, or maybe just try to get in contact, because they do have like a contact us kind of thing on here. I was wondering if you'd maybe known anybody who's actually tried reprogramming any of these.
Well, I actually have a couple of them, and the problem you're talking about, really, one is that, of course, that you learn the channels that are out there because they've moved. I mean, you have to make it stupid sometimes to make it wake up again. But the problem you're really talking about is it was the very first third generation equalizer. Its technology is quite old, and it's not something that is software upgradable, and that's the word. I believe that they've discontinued support of it at a year or so ago, or something like that. And if you're looking on the DirecTV side, it doesn't have the MPEG-4 in it, and it doesn't have the KA band, which DirecTV is using for the high def. So if you use it on the DirecTV side, you're only getting high def on channels 80, 82, 86, you know, the local, the network. But that's it. Because most of the rest of their stuff is MPEG-4, which is on the KA band satellite.
Gotcha. Thanks, Eric. The only other question I have for you real quick here is the only disadvantage I have about the Zenith, the output of it, is like S-video. In other words, it's not composite or HDMI. Are you aware of any receivers out there that they have that have a better like composite output or a better input that's not... Because, don't get me wrong, the picture's really... It's pretty grand coming out of the Zenith converter, but it's not as good as Fios. And it's not as good as the HDT-100 in the final output that goes to the TV. So I was wondering if there are any other of these receivers that have better, you know, higher quality outputs that go into the TV.
I could hear that Eric got called away on the phone. You may have to repeat that question. In the meantime, let me pick up Mr. TUK. Is that Trenholm? Mr. TUK, give me the full set of calls and your name. I know I should know you, KQRIW.
Good evening, Dick. It's Phil. WB2CUK, and I just turned the radio on about 10 minutes ago, and I'm glad you're talking about this digital business, because I'm just wondering, I have a couple of questions. Number one, are any of the TV stations actually putting out a digital signal now? I picked up a converter, and I'm getting the Fios, the Verizon Fios, and for a while, all my analog sets were working fine. They converted over to digital, and it went through the set-top boxes, I guess whatever algorithm they send down through the fiber converted, and now all my analog sets are getting supposedly digital signals, and the ones without the box being directly driven off the cable, I had to get a converter box from them. It didn't cost me anything, but I never was able to get it to work. They supposedly send down a code to unlock it or something, I don't know. But I also bought an over-the-counter one that... at Walmart, I think it was a Motorola or one of those that was on sale. I had the little discount card, and I paid $10 for it. And I'm wondering, if I hook it up to a regular analog set, am I going to see any digital signals? And one thing that bothers me is that the input to these boxes, the 300 of the 75 ohm connector, and the most gravities, I think, have a little terminals on them, the wires coming out for 300 ohms. So I think for any kind of, and I'm wondering, Dick, is the digital signal strong enough where, let's say if I get pretty decent reception on most of the channels with gravity is, am I going to be able to get digital reception with that? If I use a transformer down from 300 to 75 ohms for the converter box, I'm wondering if that will work, because I have quite a few old sets here that I'd like to try that out on. K2RIW, WB2CUK.
Okay, when you're subscribing to any kind of a cable or fiber service, or when you're subscribing to DirecTV-like service, satellite service, the converter box that they supply to you gives you whatever you require to get all of their channels into whatever format you want, whether it's video output straight into a monitor TV set or whether it's channel 3 output, which is not the best, but you'll get continuous reception of all of the channels with those services. What you're really asking now is that with the converter box that you bought with the $40 discount card, if I understand correctly, that converter box is intended for over-the-air reception, and I think you live in Farmingdale. It is my guess that you will get moderately good over-the-air reception, and almost every one of the digital television channels that are UHF now, and some of them are about to become VHF, over-the-air, with a antenna on the roof, no sweat. When it comes to rabbit ear reception, because digital television is quite vulnerable to multipath reception, you know that when you use rabbit ears in the house, you get kind of a ghosty picture. You're getting reflections off of the water towers and local buildings and all kinds of things, reflections in your house. You're getting a slightly ghosty picture when you use rabbit ears in the house. Therefore, the rabbit ears on digital television, I think, are going to work very poorly. If Eric happens to be there, he'll probably amplify this. KE2EJ, if you're available. K2RIW on the TechNet.
KE2EJ.
Go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, I'm sorry. They called me up. They're not going to do this. They're not going to do the test tonight. So it turns out that one of the other broadcasters was nervous. That they wanted it coordinated where all their guys were there. That, you know, should something blow up, because they're still transmitting analog. You know, it's a shared antenna. The high V. Eight bat wings up there now. There was a question coming at me, but I'm sorry I didn't listen to it. K4IWK.
Okay, Eric, I'll repeat the question. Bill, WB2CUK, is asking, will he with rabbit ear reception, I'm distilling it, will he get over-the-air reception with rabbit ears in Farmingdale? And I think the answer is 95% no. I think if he has a rooftop antenna in Farmingdale, in good operation, I think he's going to get lots and lots of digital television, Hi-V and UHF. But the analog television that he watches with rabbit ears now in his house in Farmingdale, and I am guessing it is sometimes a ghosty picture, I think digitally that's not going to work with his converter box that he bought with the $40 discount card. That's my belief. He's got to go to a rooftop antenna. You maybe want to amplify that. KE2EJ, K2RIW.
Alright, K2IW, K2J. Yeah, he's going to pick up some stuff with the rabbit ears. He'll pick up Canic 21, no problem. He'll probably pick up, Channel 55. That's a little far for him, but, you might pick up CBS. But it's going to be iffy. Yeah, the only thing that'll come in really solid, with rabbit ears is B21. Not a very big log periodic on the roof to do a fine job. It shouldn't be any problem at all. I mean, I do fine from Plainview with a little teeny antenna and a big antenna. K2IW cage with you.
RSO recognized. What is the minimum antenna you've ever used in Plainview? And Plainview is on 220 foot above sea level land, so it's a little bit optimistic, but what's the minimum antenna you've ever used to get Empire State Building reception on digital over the air? Over to you, Eric.
Now, if you remember, I showed you a little plastic antenna called a solar sensor. Remember, it's like two stamped pieces of metal that are held together with a piece of plastic. It looks like it's on a model airplane holder. It's got a little S-connector on the back of it.
Okay. And what channels were you getting with that? Roughly how many channels? But again, as I said, your land is 220 feet above sea level, so it's a little bit unfair. The majority of us don't live on top of that kind of a miniature mountain. You got it, Eric.
Okay. Well, if I take the antenna and put it, say, on the air conditioner outside, I get them all. When I bring it inside, don't forget the building a metal tin can. It becomes a lot more difficult. So, you know, what's fair is fair. If you're talking about a wood frame house, is being in that particular spot, you can probably make do with it.
Actually, it's a pretty cool little antenna. It works very well. And that antenna is both upper VHF as well as UHF. Eric, go ahead.
Believe it or not, it starts at channel 2. And it works pretty darn good. It came out about 4 or 5 years ago. 5 or 6 years ago. It's based on some German guy's design. I said, well, actually, I'm going to bring it with me to the next to the Weimar meeting in January. So I'll probably bring a digital receiver, spectrum analyzer, some pictures of the transmitter and that kind of stuff. Could you RWK to again?
Yeah, let's run this by again. You're either talking about Ham Radio University at Briarcliff College in January, or you're talking about the general meeting of LIMARC. If I understand correctly, you are the guest speaker for LIMARC's general meeting in January. You might repeat what day, and are you going to be showing us the latest hardware and digital television, in which case they better buy some extra chairs, because I think there's going to be a good-sized audience. Over to you, Eric.
Well, I'm going to bring, I mean, it's the second Wednesday. I don't know what day it is. I'll know about it in the time comes. You know, it'll be an HD receiver, so anybody that's never seen one, but at this point in their life, I'm sure everybody's seen one. I might actually bring that's a good idea. I bring a little box with me, which is an ATSC transmitter where a hard disk just kind of feeds it in, but then it's going to look like a DVR, so let's get a step on it. A spectrum analyzer so you can see what the actual signal looks like. A little silver sensor antenna so that you can try and pick something up inside that building. And, what else? Maybe some pictures of the transmitter and the tower?
Fantastic. Now, you know these people are touchy-feely, hardware-oriented people. Sounds to me like you're bringing lots of hardware. I think you're going to be putting a lot of smiles on a lot of faces. It's going to take place second Wednesday, we believe, in January, Levittown Hall on Levittown Parkway. I think it's in the town of Levittown. At least it better be Levittown Hall on Levittown Parkway. That's where the meetings are normally held on LIMARC. Anyone want to give us a update on that? And Bill, you being one of the officials of LIMARC, could certainly amplify what I just said as far as the meeting is concerned. And Bill,